was the worst of times. It was the end of times. How do you feel?
I don't know. There's ways to put into words how bad I feel.
To start the conversation, America went from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. I'm just afraid that it may break down into tears. You may have to take over.
I'll be right there crying with you.
My biggest thing is I'm worried that people are going to skip to the end. There'll be people who, yeah, that whole podcast thing they've been doing for a year, let me check that out. And they'll just go to episode 50 and it'll be me like, he's just crying into the thing the whole time. I want to really encourage people, don't do that. Don't skip to 50 and you've never heard a single episode and then just judge yourself that. Like, that's my biggest fear is that people would just listen to that and then ignore the episodes, which most of them were really good. And they'll be like, man, I'm glad I didn't waste my whole year listening to that. So I'm just telling you right now, this may not be the best episode. It might be the worst episode and the other ones are really good. Michael, what would you like to talk about?
Well, let's talk about those Japanese cherry blossoms. And
I'll cut him off one last time, just for old time's sake. The episode's title is Where Are We Going? People know every fifth episode we do our prognostications. We're leaving people in an ambiguous place. A few days ago, Trump had his first joint address to Congress, and so I thought we're kind of leaving people in a state where we're like, where we picked up was a happy rom-com, and then now we're leaving people in this Orwellian future where we're not really sure what's going to happen. It's a very ambiguous note. It'd be a great way to end the first season, but for a series finale, it's like, oh, this is kind of disappointing. But I also have a few questions from listeners. Question number one, why does Michael not talk more? I'll take this one. So I think...
Well, I think...
Michael, shut up. The question's for me.
I try to be the best co-host I can be. I kind of let you lead and chime in where I'm needed.
So strategy that worked well for our overall relationship. And people talking about what are we going to do after this? Where are we going to go? Let's just tell them. We're going to run off to Hawaii together.
Yes.
That would be a way better ending than what's going to happen. Like, oh, that was a happy ending for the finale. If your favorite show had the two characters fly away to Hawaii on a jet, I think you could get on board with that.
Well, one good thing that our listeners won't really get to benefit from, this is an ending for us. We've recorded 50 episodes, but we've been having these conversations for years.
People say, how did the podcast get started? I go, we were doing it for years. I just hit record.
Yeah.
You're joking about those Japanese cherry blossom trees. I heard podcasts like that. Because like, here's what you need to know about Tupperware, and they're comparing different types of kitchen sponges. People have made podcasts out of a lot less, so I was like, well, let's swing it. Let's see what's happening. Episode 49, which I think people, if they want like a true climax, I think 49 was it, that kind of did everything that we would hope to do with the conversation overall. I'd go back and listen to 49, but people were asking about Pacific states, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Rhode Island. Now, Michael, is that not the most random? Rhode Island, South Dakota, and Oklahoma, I bet they've never been mentioned in the same sentence. But somebody wrote in about South Dakota, what makes you think that it's hopeless to Democrats? Do I even need to answer this? I mean, there's not even a Democrat on Mount Rushmore. Speaking of that address that Trump gave, what did you think about Joe Manchin standing up and giving Cole a round of applause? I thought, God.
Cole has got a bright future. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's this new technology and this new natural resource that we found that's going to really drive the future.
That joint address to Congress, that would have been a really great address if this were 1817 instead of 2017. But when Trump gets up, he looked like one of the old robber barons or something there, being like, we're going to find more coal and deregulate the economy and keep people from suing us, and immigrants that commit attacks, we're going to investigate them. I mean, this would have been a real appropriate platform if this were like building the railroads or some shit. Like, we're going to try to figure out what's up with these Chinese coming here, doing all the railroad jobs. It just felt so dated, so backwards. I love how on Twitter, at the same time that the address was trending, so was Barack and Michelle have now had a record book deal, $60 million. You know how Nixon had this huge jealousy of JFK? That's going to be nothing compared to Trump and Obama. Everything Trump does is, well, Obama got a bigger applause, a bigger book deal, a bigger laugh. I saw where they asked Trump about the demonstrations against him, and he said Obama may be organizing it. The reality of Obama, and people like me are criticizing him for being too out of it. Like, he's on a fucking jet in the Caribbean, Naomi Campbell hanging off his shoulder. He's like, hey, Jay-Z and Beyonce and Michelle, they're having a dinner party. He's having this great time. And then Trump's over there like, Obama, he's planning the downfall of my administration. I'm like, well, he doesn't have to plan your downfall. You're going to do that for him. Do a good enough job sabotaging you. He doesn't need to. What we talked about in the last episode, how to rebuild the Democratic Party. I'm speculating Joe Joe Manchin, he may switch to the Republican Party. They've been up and giving Cole a round of applause. I know he's from a coal state, but when Trump's talking about no EPA, giving Cole, and he stands up and applauds lonely by the Democrats, at this point, what would be the difference if he did switch to the Republican Party?
Yeah.
He's not with them on anything. I mean, he didn't vote down Jeff Sessions, barely done anything to oppose Trump.
Exactly.
There's a civil war going on between different people in the Democratic Party and what used to be the conservative or red state Democrats. So a lot of people like Joe Manchin, who used to be part of that, they're out. Now, at a time when Democrats are at a 80, 90-year low point, I don't think we can lose anybody. But what do you think? Yeah. I mean, if we lose people like that are dinos and not real Democrats, can we afford to lose people like that? Or does it make us stronger in the long run to be like, okay, we've gotten rid of the last people who weren't on board with some of the things we've been trying to do?
It depends on where you're wanting to go as a party. If you're wanting
right.
to truly move left, then no, I don't think it hurts you in the long run. If you want to be an inclusive party that has that left and the center both, and you try to reach out to some of those independent and lightly leaning Republicans and hope you can get some crossover voting, having a guy like him is somebody that could do it.
That's true, but he's not really good on social issues. He's terrible on environmental issues. I mean, flat terrible.
Yeah.
You don't have to be 100% liberal, your Bernie Sanders type person, to be in the Democratic Party. And
yeah.
we're going to get into this
right.
feud that is still fucking going on inside the Democratic Party. I can't believe this. But
yeah.
when you look at Joe Manchin and you're like, these are big deal breakers. Rhode Island, somebody messaged me and they're like, how dare you? I don't remember even saying anything bad about it. I just said that it was like, we're the smallest state in America. And yeah, we have a straight congressional flush. It's not really going to make that big a difference. But okay,
yeah.
I'll concede it. But
yeah.
Rhode Island, you know, what if it's just like
yeah.
the state of Rhode Island declares war on Alabama liberal or something, and people show up to take me out. Oklahoma, people say, what makes you think Oklahoma is the most hopeless? Okay, so there's a lot of shutout states. And by that, I mean Republican governor, Republican senators, Republican Congress. There's a lot of them that have not single Democrat, really lopsided state house, state senate. But usually your only bright spot in a red state is you go to the biggest city and they'll have a Democratic mayor. You go to
yeah.
Birmingham or Mobile or something, they'll have a Democrat mayor. Oklahoma City's mayor's a Republican.
Yeah.
When you go to your biggest city and their mayor's a Republican, it's kind of in that middle area of the Southeast and the Midwest, like it's kind of that convergence point. Both of the rivers of conservatives converge at that tributary that is Oklahoma. And a lot of huge televangelists are based out of there. It's a
yeah.
very
yeah.
religious state. A lot of televangelists, a lot of Christian universities, not promising. And then somebody else asked, why is this the last episode? Why did you stop at 50? I kind of hoped that eventually when we were doing our thing, people would see it, like it, embrace it, and we might get a syndication deal, and we might get sponsors, or we might grow it into something. Although I've had a lot of fun. I think people who listen to it, they love it. If you go to iTunes and we got like 14
yeah.
five-star reviews or something like that, there's not a single negative review, which is surprising. YouTube people that did actually watch the first 10 videos on YouTube all gave it a thumbs up, but it was just hard
yeah.
to get those initial people in. My bigger point, which is that red states have been kind of abandoned by the Democratic Party. People who like liberalism don't necessarily care about Alabama. I mean, at all.
Right.
You know, and
right.
people who like Alabama don't care about liberalism, so it's hard to connect those two things. So when you ask a lot of people that normally listen to liberal podcasts and Democratic podcast, hey, do you want to hear two white heterosexual males from Alabama talk about it? No. I'm out. Forget it. That's a problem the Democratic Party is going to keep struggling with, become an inclusive party. But at the same time, this terminal lack of interest in rural areas is going to kind of be fatal for a while.
Yeah.
Which kind of leads me to the DNC chair race. Last episode, I talked about the 12 steps to rebuilding the Democratic Party. And number three was pick Tom Perez over Keith Ellison. The DNC head should not be a controversial figure. But during this race, you would think Tom Perez was Joe Manchin or something. When he won that nomination, I was like, oh, God, another centrist. If Keith Ellison
yeah.
wasn't running and Bernie wasn't backing him, would you have ever heard Tom Perez called a centrist, a real
no.
liberal, not a real Democrat? Like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Yeah.
First black Latino chair of the DNC ever. They made him sound like George Wallace or some shit. I mean, they made him sound like he was just barely
yeah.
in the Democratic Party. See the people putting up DMX and
yeah.
be like, I'm gone, Democrats, I'm gone. First of all, Bernie fans have been gone about 10 fucking times, okay?
Yeah.
Like, how can we push you if you never leave? I'm leaving. It's kind of dramatic at a certain point. When I look at Democrats fighting each other right now, we are existing on a different planet than
yeah.
what's going on right now.
If you look at these people that were so adamant about Ellison and anti-Perez, honestly, if you really got them in a room and sat them down, it's like, okay, what do you not like about Perez? What do you like about Ellison? They couldn't tell you the first thing about either one of them. They probably couldn't even tell you what state they're from. Ellison was Bernie's boy, and Bernie was supporting him, so therefore, they had to support him.
Like you're saying, nobody likes Keith Ellison for Keith Ellison. They like him because he's Bernie's guy. Now, the DNC chair is not typically that important. I feel like it took on a huge symbolic significance. Bernie versus Hillary and the shadow war between liberals and so-called sellout Democrats, even though 90% of the country literally cannot tell the difference between these guys. I mean,
yeah.
They don't see a difference, really. I know exactly that Republicans wanted him, because then every single thing becomes about Muslims. And every single thing becomes about the Democrats are too liberal, they're too left-wing. And in 2018, right before the congressional Democrats, so like 6 months before the congressional races, they would have released all the scandals about Keith Ellison. I lived in Minneapolis, and somebody literally told me this guy tried to fuck me at a party. They're talking about Keith. Somebody else said that they had a friend that had had sex with this guy. Now, that's none of my business. I don't really care. And I've defended Anthony Weiner and all these people. Like, whatever he does, it's his business. But I know the trap is he gets the DNC chair. And then June, July of 2018 midterms, they release all the scandals they get about this guy. Let him hang himself. Then the Democrats are back on the defensive with some huge scandal. And everybody's distracted. And the Democratic Party is chaotic at a time when they need to really get new congressional Democrats in there. That's exactly what would have happened.
Yeah.
Not today, motherfucker. Like, they avoided a punch, went out of their way not to fall into that trap. When you look at the candidates and their positions, beyond that and beyond the blackmail, Tom had the best answer, because they said, how did Donald Trump win? He goes, well, people in rural and suburban America, Trump went out there and he goes, here's what I believe, here's what I think, and they felt seen by him. The Democrats, what you heard was, vote for Hillary because Donald Trump's crazy. And it kind of became about Trump, and it didn't help congressional Democrats at all, because they tied it all to Trump. And the other Republicans were like, oh, well, he's sane compared to Trump. They've been tied into the entire Republican Party and the ideas. And then he started talking about the statewide level. I mean, he went real in-depth about the DNC has to put more money into the statewide level, and we have to have a year-round organizing strategy. And clearly, candidates, you didn't hear them talk with the specificity that he had. And then this Sally Boynton Brown, it's my job to tell white people to shut up. White people need to learn when to be quiet. This woman is the chair of the Idaho Democrats. Idaho, black population, 5 people. We just keep falling into that trap. She's saying black people need a voice at the table. The 6 candidates, 4 of them were black. Only 2 of them were white. This canard of, like, the Democrats are not well representing everybody else. To people outside the Democratic Party, there's a disconnect between, like, what this person running for the chair is saying about the party and then the actual optics of who's running for the DNC chair race.
Right.
I guess what I'm getting is they're really getting the message that the white working class and rural voters are just completely turned off by the Democratic Party. We're not connecting with these people at all.
One of the past episodes, as you were talking about, right after the Democratic convention, looking at all the people that gave speeches and all of that, like, if you're a white working class male, really, you don't see a party that represents you, and that's something that they're still struggling with.
It's easy to, like, dismiss that, and white males, if they've run the country for so long, why not let somebody else take a chance? And that's true. Like, I'm not saying that that's not true. Whenever I hear people bitching about the Democrats, it's pure optics. Like I said in 49, our issues are popular. What do you think about income inequality and unions and affordable health care and people getting into college? Most people don't even care about gay marriage or abortion anymore. I got sucked into that whole narrative of the white working class. They're doing bad. They're having hard times. They're putting in skid row or something. And they're not really doing it that bad. What's different is reality shows and social media have made people feel like losers, even if they're not. Like, even if they're doing okay, every day, rich people are rubbing their fucking wealth in your face because you're watching reality shows, sitting in a mansion or something. Like, there's no poor people on reality shows, like The Real Housewives or Kardashians. So you're seeing celebrity culture. Oh, my God, look at my beach vacation. And they're taking a picture of the Bahamas. Then the next week, they're in Japan, Tokyo, or whatever. And so you're seeing these people living these lives. You didn't see that shit before. Like, Marilyn Monroe's every adventure wasn't on Snapchat and Instagram. You didn't see all of their wealth and ostentatiousness rubbing your face. Working class guys like, hey, I'm going to take this girl out on a date. And then because she's watching Real Housewives and Kardashians and these shows over and over and over again, it distorts the perspective. So they go out on a date and the woman's, oh, you know what? I want this Golden Nugget Martini. They're like, oh, that's $200. We're going to take a Gold Nugget in the middle of this Martini. No, I don't want the Gold Nugget in the Martini. You need to put it on the side. I still want the Gold Nugget because, I mean, otherwise the Martini is like $20. And what the fuck is a $20 Martini? They just hit the Gold Nugget, put it on the side so that it's still $200. And then the guy's like, I don't know if I can afford $200 for one drink. Oh my God, what the fuck? fucking losers seeing this lifestyle that they don't live and everybody else is living it. And I think that that's made people feel worse off than they really are. Whenever they're bitching about Democrats, they're not really bitching about Democrats. Have you noticed that? They're complaining about Amy Schumer, Lena Dunham. It's like feminist comedians and Black Lives Matter and all these things that are not really inside the Democratic Party. They're not saying, oh, that Chuck Schumer burns me. They're not even really going after Democratic politicians. I mean, I don't know what they think people are supposed to do about that. Like, when you're voting a straight Republican ticket, was that county sheriff or district attorney, was he supposed to say, I'm going to personally shut up Lena Dunham? Like, what is he supposed to do about a Hollywood celebrity you find obnoxious? Yeah. These people are not inside the Democratic Party, but that's who's getting all of them against us.
Yeah. Prime example, the outrage at the Oscars, just people boycotting the Oscars, all of the political sides and the political speeches, and Hollywood needs to stick with making movies because that's what they're good at and all this nonsense.
There was the thing about La La Land was supposed to win and Moonlight won. In that 2-minute time period between La La Land not really winning but being announced the winner and Moonlight being the real winner, there was Twitter just exploded. I knew racist Hollywood, fuck all this shit. They would never let Moonlight win. And of course, these Hollywood liberals, now keep in mind, 2 out of the 4 actor categories went to black actors. The guy from Moonlight won Best Supporting Actor, and Viola Davis won Best Supporting Actress. Casey Affleck, when he beat Denzel Washington for Best Actor, I thought people on Twitter were going to explode. Like, how could they let this sexual harassing white male beat Denzel? And all that? No, Denzel's won twice. He's won twice before, but it still seemed like an outrage to these people. It just goes back to the point number 9 thing I read last week about stop falling for star poker culture. This stuff doesn't matter. It does not matter at all. I feel like when you're outside of the Democratic Party and you're looking at liberals, I mean, our debates are happening on a different fucking planet. When Keith Ellison lost, but he was still like the vice chair. First, you had people being like, well, the DNC, that's just a figurehead position, so they might as well pick Keith because it's just purely symbolic and they need to throw Bernie people a bone. And then when Tom Perez was like, Keith is going to be my vice chair, all the Bernie people, it's just symbolic. There's no real fucking power. And then Tom Perez, how you like how he's had to go everywhere like he and Keith Ellison are best friends or something. Keith, does he get a nice pin call with me? Look like they're just best friends because all these crazy Bernie people being like, the Democratic Party, I want a dim exit. I want out of the Democratic Party. What the fuck are you talking about? A madman has taken the country. Donald Trump is the president of the United States. And at the joint address of Congress, behind him was Mike Pence and Paul Ryan. That is the line of secession. So even if Trump is impeached, Mike Pence and Paul Ryan are behind him, okay?
Yeah.
This is the reality. Democrats are completely not competitive in 2/3 of America. And you're talking about Jim Exit, Democrat Party, they're so corrupt. What the fuck are you talking about? Michael, if Keith Ellison had won, for 2 seconds, would you have even been like, I'm going to leave the Democratic Party?
No.
People say, well, you have to be sympathetic to Bernie fans. If Bernie had been the nominee over Hillary, there's no way I'd be like, I might as well vote for Trump. I would have been like, okay, we got to get Bernie elected. And if Keith Ellison had been the DNC chair, there's not even 5 seconds it would have occurred to me to put up DMX or I didn't get my way, I'm going to leave the party.
Right.
There's no other game in town, people. We're going to fucking wake up. Like, right now, we're on a desert island fighting over the last coconut instead of like, oh, you know what? We should get a boat and get off this fucking island.
Yeah.
Like, we should get out of this situation instead of fighting each other over, he crossed my line of sand. There's an extra grain of sand on this side of the island. Let's get off the island. Like, why are we fighting these crazy-ass battles? Kind of made it look like Bernie versus Hillary, and it's not just that. You have the Bernie people, and you have the Hillary people, I guess what they call the Democratic establishment. And then the Obama people, they're not really either of those groups. And so you'll see triangulated fights break out. So you have the Bernie people, usually like white working class guys, they're really mad at the gig economy, but they think they're mad at Hillary. Somebody who's a white feminist or something will show up and defend Hillary and be like, this is all sexism. And then somebody who's black will show up and be like, y'all are both racist. What the fuck are we doing? Like, this is crazy. These people understand that we're not the majority of America. We're not even close. We have a decade of serious work to do to rebuild the party. And we're fighting like my demo inside the Democratic Party. We act like Republicans and moderates and independents and all these states that we've lost over the last 8 years. We act like they don't exist. Like it's about the DNC chair or Hollywood. Is La La Land or Moonlight going to win Best Picture? Trump people hate them both. So what fucking difference does it make? Like, they're not going to watch either one of these movies. The DNC chair race, Jimu Green. I'm the daughter of undocumented Liberian immigrants. Of course, the Trump people are over there like, see?
Yeah.
But on her website, it was all about, we have to get rid of superdelegates. It was all about federal, 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 president, president, president. Keith Ellison said, well, my strategy is to make the urban turnout, because in Minneapolis, he said that he raised the turnout so much, it cost Norm Coleman his Senate seat, because now the urban areas vote. That's still at Minneapolis. Two-thirds of the entire state lives within 10 miles of St. Paul and Minneapolis. That's different. Like, most states are not that concentrated in population. But he's talking about increasing urban turnout so that it helps statewide Democrats. She's talking about the superdelegates. We're from Marshall County, Alabama. When Barack Obama took office, there was a Democratic state senator and a Democratic state representative that both lost their seats in 2010. The sheriff was Democratic. The district attorney was Democratic. All these people were Democratic in 2008. And this is a fairly rural county in Alabama. All these people had jobs in 2008, 2010, they all lost their jobs.
Yeah.
All these strategies people are talking about, except for Tom Perez, they just didn't really get that. I think he understands still the organizing a lot better. Just answered another long-running mystery. A couple of people on podcast, they asked, where are you from in Alabama? So Sand Mountain. So see, right there, we're already paying off. The final mystery is revealed. Yeah, I got that question a lot. What part of Alabama are you from? And I kind of wanted to leave it ambiguous for a long time, because if you say Sand Mountain, there'll be somebody in Mobile. I'm not listening to this. What the fuck do they know?
Yeah.
You know, and the other L.A., because I live in Los Angeles, but the other L.A., Lower Alabama, they don't like the northern people. But when you say North Alabama, you're like, huh, Huntsville or Birmingham? I'm like, okay, let's quit.
Yeah.
Marshall County or Etowah County, because I ain't going for the other one. So you start getting into those groups. But to know where we're going, let's know where we've been. Let's quickly run through our old episodes, just kind of take a stroll through memory lane. We've put off 9 hours of free entertainment. I think we've earned a little bit of a nostalgic lap around the park. Episode one, who is the least authentic candidate? Kind of the worst one, only because I hadn't edited the sound yet. So if you listen back to the very first recording, who's the least authentic candidate, we're having fun. It's a funny conversation. I think it sets the tone. But there's so many times where you can hear me breathing. In the first episode, it's like... And there's all this Gandolfini, Darth Vader style, like breathing over there. And that's in the second one, too, but to a lesser extent. The second one, what's behind the whitewashing of George W. Bush? And, you know, that's still going on. I see positive posts of him on social media a lot. People are saying, I wish Bush was president. I'm like, oh, my God, that's how bad things are. People are like, I'm the sergeant of Bush years. That's bad. The first 10 episodes I posted to YouTube with a lot of funny pictures. And in the second episode, it had, like, all these hilarious pictures of Jeb and George over the years. If people really remember them, I don't think they would be nostalgic. I Bush and Reagan, they set the stage for Trump. Some people say, I wish we had Reagan, I wish we had Bush. I mean, they opened the door for a guy like this, part of a continuum on the Republican side of just progressively shittier presidents. Episode 3, which is more dangerous, Trump's fear or Rosie Rubionomics? This was our first really good episode.
Yeah.
Because I think we laid out a great case against Reaganomics. It was the first one where I edited the sound. People complain about the sound all the time. Listen to the first two and listen to the other ones after 3, and then you start seeing it get a little bit better.
Yeah.
Number 4, are Trump and Sanders flip sides of the same coin? That one hadn't aged so well. So that's a good question. Do you feel like we were too rough on Bernie throughout the conversation?
I don't. He may have had a little second thoughts, but not me.
Yeah. You just wait until this conversation over so you can come out as a Trump fan.
How'd you know?
Michael, I really should let you host the last episode and talk more. And you made a hilarious joke that you're like, I'm going to say, I've been a Trump fan this whole time. You just won't let me get a word out, so I can't come out as a Trump fan and endorse him. I'm more conflicted about Bernie than ever because I liked him for a long time. And then during the race with Hillary, I kind of started to hate him. Honestly, if he had quit like March the 15th, I would have went out thinking, I still really like this guy and I'm glad he's in the Senate. But him staying in there till June and creating all these problems for Hillary, I definitely do think he cost Hillary the election to an extent by staying in there so long. But at the same time, recently got on an airplane, went to New York. 10 years ago, your bags used to be free.
Yeah.
You had check-in bag. They used to give you peanuts. Now your check-in bag's money. This airline has went to a thing where the carry-on bag now costs money. So you don't even carry on a bag anymore. That costs money now. Peanuts are not free anymore. So you get on the airplane and they're like, oh, it's going to be $2 for peanuts. Peanuts are not free. Check-in bag's not free. And my carry-on bag costs money. Fuck it. I'm for Bernie Sanders. You just can't take it anymore. The gig economy sucks. People that used to be able to get really high-paying jobs, you think there'll ever be a point where you just get so squeezed, your rental people come in and they go, oh, yeah, it's too bad that we're going up 1,000% on your rent or something. You're like, fuck it, I'm for Sanders.
No.
Number 5, is the winner of Iowa really a loser? And I think the YouTube video is good for that one because there's a lot of really weird things people in Iowa do. There's the Miss Port pageant and some things like that. Any fond thoughts of Iowa? We felt so innocent back in those days at the very beginning of the race.
I forget Iowa.
forget Iowa. Six. But seriously, is Ted Cruz eligible? Boy, talk about an innocent question. Back then, we were worried about Ted Cruz's citizenship.
Yeah.
Back then, it was like, is Ted Cruz eligible? And of course, we never thought, is the president going to be a Russian spy? Canada trying to undermine us somehow by having Cruz across the border. And then, of course, Vladimir Putin's like, excellent. People say if you had more episodes, I kind of would have liked to have done an episode about Russia, Putin and Trump and their connections specifically. Just your personal gut feeling. I've never been to Russia, but I probably never will go. But does Russia not just seem like the most miserable-ass place? Like, does it not just seem like the last episode? Where are we taking our spring break? Russia. No. It just seems like a bunch of people sitting around hatching up schemes, and we'll scheme our way into a vodka bottle.
Well, I mean, what else do you have to do there? I mean, other than to hack into America's election.
America's Alabama political bloggers. My site's been hacked multiple times from Russia. I'm not kidding. Like, I've had people try to hack my site over and over again. I went to a ridiculously elaborate process to sign into my own website. It's not crazy. I mean, I have to put like a bloody thumbprint on the scale to get into my own website or something, but it's because it got hacked. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, why do they want my site so bad? I'm like, oh yeah, like, you know what? That free site that makes $5 get a hold of that $4 in Google ad revenue he's accumulated throughout the last 3 years. Our currency must go a long way in Russia. That $4, that must be able to buy a house for that or something. Like, yeah, we could feed ourselves for a year with this money. Number seven, the drug war really erased war. She talked a lot about that one too, which was good. You laid out a really convincing case of the black codes and all the laws that they had. I mean, when you look at post-Civil War black codes all the way up to today's drug laws, it really is a continuum of how do we get free labor. And that came out back in like February, and then you saw this movie 13th come out September, October, and I was like, well, only they've been listening to Blue in Alabama. And half the time, and for $0, we make the same case. The YouTube video, I find a lot of old pictures of, first, they didn't want Chinese because of the opium, and people go through it that way. So there's a lot of parallels. Number eight, should liberals feel guilty for not warning Scalia? Now that he's been dead about a year, and we're seeing this Supreme Court seat play out, looking back on it, I mean, does that change anything about Scalia for you?
You know, I know Trump had his wife at the speech to Congress as a guest, but no, not really.
For the YouTube video, I put up a lot of pictures of things Scalia has actually said. Black engineers should go to the same school as white engineers, and they need a slower curriculum where they can learn more. Their brains are not as developed. The shit he said was outrageous. Yeah. That's the thing about people bitching about political correctness, because the thing is, people hear me criticizing some of the DNC candidates, and they'll think I'm on their page. Like, I live in Los Angeles, and I'll meet somebody who's like, oh, here's a white guy from Alabama. He's going to be just as racist as we are. That's what they think. Oh, Alabama accent. They'll be like, yeah, I can't stand that Obama guy. And I'm like, well, I voted for him twice. I'm a big fan of his. And that's the thing about the political correctness. There's like no nuance about this, which kind of brings us to episode 9. Is there a racial, sexual divide among progressives? Because it felt like there was a little bit of a racial gap, and there was a bit of a gender that a lot of the Bernie fans, they kind of fit angry, young, white men. That kind of seemed to be a huge demographic for him.
Yeah.
And the thing about political correctness, when people are bitching about that, the critiques that I give, they're not the same as the critiques. Yeah, I wish liberals would quit being so PC, and somebody comes up and be like, I know it. How come black people call each other the N-word that we don't get to? And it's just like, wait a minute, I didn't say that. I mean, you crack the door open and they blow it off the fucking hinges. There's just no nuance. I mean, when you start seeing a liberal like kind of getting on your nerves with things I said about the DNC chair, there's all this shit that people just immediately sidetrack it to. We're like, oh, he agrees with this. Black Lives Matter is a hate group. I'm like, no, I wouldn't. Like, no, you're fools.
Yeah.
But that's what people start hearing. And they hear two white guys from Alabama kind of subtly critiquing the DNC race, some of the overly pandering, just saying something like that where liberals have gone overboard, and just that mild critique. People will hear that and they'll start thinking that I'm Jeff Sessions Jr. What is this debate even about? Democrats are sitting there like, I think Tom Perez is a fake Democrat, and oh, Keith Ellison, he's a Muslim. Republicans, they see this debate between Perez and Ellison, they're like, okay, Democrats are backing a black Muslim versus a black Latino, and these are two groups that they're deathly afraid of. To them, it's like, the coup going to come from a Muslim or a Latino? Episode 10, who were each candidate's fans and their election strategies, exploring GOP identity politics? Everything I just said really plays into the GOP identity politics. Because they definitely have it. You can't see Trump's decision to start the voice, that task force, to investigate crimes that committed by immigrants, that definitely plays into GOP identity politics.
Right.
Well, immigrants are committing all the violent crimes, and they're like, well, that's kind of racist. I didn't bring up race. You just said immigrants are committing all the violent crimes. I don't like how Obama, he's always trying to rub his blackness in my face. Well, you know, he's just trying to represent something that hadn't been around in mainstream politics before. Like, why are you bringing race into this? They do this shit all the time. And then when somebody says, well, you're bringing up race, you're talking about immigrants, Muslims, and Black Lives Matter all the fucking time. And then they'll be like,
yeah,
I didn't bring up race. You're the one talking about it. Every criticism I hear of the Democrats, it really is just Black Lives Matter, Amy Schumer, Lena Dunham, celebrity this, activist movement that. And if they're not really racist and sexist and homophobic, why is this the only thing that they ever talk about? Like, why does it always go back to this, like, over and over again?
Yeah.
Me, personally, I liked the movie Moonlight. I thought it was a good movie, but I liked La La Land more. And I wrote an article about it the next day, but, like, 3 days later, I'm not still sitting here stewing about how Moonlight won Best Picture. So you get over it if you don't really care about it that much. La La Land's a great movie. People should go see it. They should see Moonlight, too. They should watch both movies and see which one that they think is better. They're both good movies, but, I mean, something like that can happen, and people are still. People say, well, what's next for us? Where are we going? The one thing I really hope doesn't happen to me is I hope I don't turn into Adam fucking Carolla. Jimmy Kimmel went on to host Jimmy Kimmel Live and the Oscars, and Adam Carolla is hosting a podcast ranting about black people. All he fucking does is rant and rave about millennials and Black Lives Matter. He's just talking out of his ass all the time. When we brought up Gavin Newsom last episode about him possibly running for president, somebody sent me a link. Gavin Newsom was on Adam Carolla's podcast. Adam Carolla kept bringing up, well, black people's problems. They don't have a family unit. The men are not around, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he's saying all this shit that black people have heard their whole lives. They've heard this for the last 50 years. This is not new information. And Gavin kept trying to change the subject, and he kept going over and over and over. He went back to it. You Google Adam Carolla, Black Lives Matter, there'll be 50 fucking results to come up. This is not just one interview that he gave about this. I mean, he's talked about this 50, 60 times. But he's married to a white wife. He's got white kids. You don't look at him as even having any special knowledge of the black community. Like, nobody who is black is like, I wonder what Adam Carolla thinks about us. He doesn't know any of the shit he's talking about. But what happens is other white people listen to this and be like, see, he's getting it figured out. Other white people would go to him and be like, let's hear about what's wrong with black people. You're like, they wouldn't want to hear it from a black person. And I've talked about it in one of the episodes. My wife is Nigerian and she loves Obama. Well, white people will come up to her and be like, boy, what about that Obama? They want her to diss Obama. It's really important to them that she hates him as much as they do. If she came out and she's like, well, Obama, you know, he's not perfect. And see, I'm not a racist. Black people hate him too. It's just all about a big smoke screen to hide it. See, my black friend agrees with me and be like, well, I'm a woman you didn't want to get hired with you. Number 11, what's the matter with Alabama? Examining red states. That's a good episode.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
When it comes down to what's the matter with Alabama, how did this state that used to be Democratic go red? I know it's a complicated issue. We had an entire episode about it. People should listen to it. But if you had any new thoughts between now and when we recorded that?
I think we did a pretty good job describing it.
Number 12, why March 15th is the most important campaign day. We literally just talked about Bernie refusing to drop out after he lost. And that was when I started to pivot my feelings towards tolerance into like, okay, you really should go home. Number 13, is Trump the new Hitler, the new Reagan, or the new Obama? Surprisingly, this episode holds up really well.
Yeah.
He used a lot of the same tricks Obama did to motivate his base. I mean, he made them feel like he saw them.
That's probably one of my favorite ones that we recorded early on.
Yeah. When the final die is cast and people go back and look at the Trump presidency, where are we headed? Are we the American Hitler? Is he just going to fizzle out and be a one-term loser? Right now, it seems pretty ominous. I mean, it really feels like we're headed down a dark path.
Yeah, I think where we head, as scary as this sounds, is entirely up to Republicans in Congress. They're the ones that have the power to... That's a terrifying thought.
It is, because I speculated on Twitter. I was like, what would Trump have to do to get impeached by these people? And the only thing I could come up with is that he kills John McCain on live television. But during that joint address, what if he said, and now for the dramatic finale, we're going to execute John McCain, and he has, like, Mike Pence bring out a guillotine, five of his security goons are like, wait a minute, they're hoisting him in a guillotine. And then number two, after execute John McCain, would be, he transitions into a woman. Like, he comes out and is like, you guys, all this sexism and all this, it's really because I've been hiding my feelings. I'm really Donatella Trump. That's the only thing that could get him impeached. But we draw the line here. No, no. When it was bipolar, that was okay. But now, it's out of the question. Number 14, our doomed campaign, the new Ponzi schemes, and the election industrial complex. Do you think a lot of people who gave Bernie a lot of money, do you think they feel ripped off?
No, because they're still fighting for him.
Bernie is gone, but the campaign's still going.
You know, yeah.
They're like, we can get the time machine and the Electoral College. Well, I don't know. I don't know what that is going to happen. But the other people invested in Ted Cruz and John Kasich feel ripped off because they kept their campaigns going, especially Kasich kept his going.
Maybe them, because you know how Republicans are with their money.
Yeah. Number 15, what would each candidate do as president? What would their administration look like? That one might be a good one to go back and just see. Because we talked a lot about each candidate, but I think when it came down to Trump, we literally were like, who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
Number 16, why do people hate Hillary? We really lay out all the things people said about her and then debunked them one by one by one by one. I feel like if we could have got people that voted for Trump and strapped them to a fucking medical gurney and made them listen to that episode, it might have got through to them. But I know people who hate Hillary, they didn't listen to it. The reason people hate her, it's just so crazy. And this whole thing about Hillary's the lesser of two evils, you think there's a lot of people that were real, oh, Hillary. And then now that Trump's the president, it's like, wait a minute. Like, you think there's people who feel bad about being so lackluster and like, I don't give a shit about her.
Yeah.
Especially some of the Obama coalition and the Bernie coalition were kind of like, Hillary, she sucks so bad. They all said that shit because they thought she was going to win. And then the second that she lost, it was like, wait, what happened now? What happened? And then they freaked out because the whole lackluster Hillary shit, that went out the window.
Yeah.
Number 17, are politically correct liberals the new social conservatives? They are kind of becoming that way, where social conservatives used to really get on people's nerves. The time period that we grew up in, the Bush presidency was a really socially conservative time period. We grew up in a really socially conservative place, obviously Alabama, and it kind of became, I don't want people to tell me I can't buy a lottery ticket and I can't drink, I can't watch porn, I can't have sex. And now the politically correct liberals are kind of on that side of, if you don't think a model who's 300 pounds is beautiful, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
If you body shame her, you're part of the fucking problem. And they're trying to do like a pornography ban. It used to be conservatives. Let's get rid of the Victoria's Secret fashion show because degrading the women. And they didn't believe that. They just said that. Now politically correct liberals are the ones like, whenever the Victoria's Secret fashion show comes on, they're like, oh, why is this still on the air? Why can't they just watch porn? I'm like, why should everything that we find sexually attractive be put into the porno box? We're huddled into Finland's cave, jacking each other off. Like, everything we like is just put so far underground and illegal. And why does that be internet porn? You can't have one night where it's like, oh, Victoria's Secret fashion box. They're very beautiful. Some of the positions that social conservatives used to hold, now liberals are making the case for them.
Yeah, some of them, definitely. So.
Number 18, are Republicans more forgiving of sex scandals than Democrats? That one holds up extremely well. Who would have ever thought there'd be a tape of Trump bragging about basically molesting women?
Right.
And then Republicans are just like, he's still better than Hillary. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Go back and listen to that one, because that one really holds up. Number 19, should red states and blue states swap positions? That was a good one.
Yeah.
What are Trump and Hillary's general election strategies? Number 21, is Bernie the new Ron Paul, Buchanan, Perot, Nader, or a political poet? This is when he was still in the race. He wouldn't drop out. He wouldn't go anywhere. Number 22, are social conservatives over? And then, of course, Jeff Sessions is like, I'll be damned if I'm going to let him die on my watch. All of the liberal fears that Jeff Sessions would be a huge regressive racist who just does everything he can to hurt minorities and people who smoke weed and gay people and transgender. I think that's been pretty well validated.
Yeah, I think so.
Number 23, are we safer? This whole thing of the joint address, he's going to give the single largest spending increase to the military budget. Are we like that guy at the blackjack table who's like, I'm going to put my house mortgage on black? We're just gambling it all the way up the table. Like, will we have to literally go bankrupt before we quit spending ourselves on the military?
To answer your question, yes. But the scariest part about Trump's plan is that he's taking all of this money and giving it to the Department of Defense. And he's taking money out of the State Department. That tells you where his priorities are. We're not going to negotiate. We're not going to try to deal diplomatically with these countries. We're going to just build our military up, basically threaten them.
What if it came out that Trump is using this military money to build new weapons for Russia? Putin's like, ooh, we need a new F-15 tank. He's going through a catalog, picking up the new weapons. Would that scandal breaking, would that finally be enough to get Trump impeached, you think?
Maybe.
I know people say it every single day, but if this were Hillary, she'd already be fitted for handcuffs. Hillary's handcuffs would be diamond studded and they'd be like Wall Street. I love how this image of Hillary is this Marie Antoinette, swanky, out of touch, let him be naked. And all you ever saw her wearing were like these really plain, boring pantsuits. You never get this idea of Hillary Clinton spendthrift.
Yeah.
The woman that they're really talking about is Melania fucking Trump. They don't see it that way. Like, she's a clothes horse. She's had literal stories break about her being a former prostitute. But in their minds, it's like, oh, Hillary got a speech from Goldman Sachs, the poor, you know, she's just got like a gold-plated toilet seat and all this ostentatious wealth. And like, Trump was a literal billionaire, and he convinced you that he was an everyday man. He's eating KFC, but he's eating it on a gold-plated private jet. I don't know if you jackasses caught that part. Like, he's on his fucking private jet, and then Hillary's over there like, she spent $5 for a new tweet bracelet. I bet that's taxpayer money that it's coming from. Like, they really obsessed about her fashion and her clothes. And I never saw Hillary wear anything that looked that expensive. Melania Trump, her gown to that joint address probably cost the GDP of Liberia.
Yeah.
24, do people even want small government? This is one of my favorite episodes. I really like it, where we're kind of making the case of big business is not the answer. And it's really important episode now because Trump has put all these business people in charge of his cabinet and all these departments. People have absorbed this idea that government is so dysfunctional and it's so terrible and it never works the right way and private business is the only way to do it. But we don't see that. When private companies take something over, they usually run it into the ground and they mismanage it, ruin it. So we don't really see this idea that private business does work that better than government. When stuff gets contracted out, the taxpayers are still paying. It's just that a private company is in charge of all that money that all gets kicked up to the CEO and they're less accountable for that money. When they do a contractor, it's more expensive than when the government just does it straight and you're getting shittier service. Nobody's happy with it. It never works. 25, who will be VP? Is this a return to strategic VP picks? 26, guns. This is one of my favorites. I think the podcast has three sweet spot periods. I think there's like the whole 24, 26, 27, 28. That's kind of like the first real sweet spot period. Then there's like education and climate crisis and media, and those episodes are a real sweet spot. 40, how do Democrats lose, how do Republicans win. And then this last run of episodes, like post-election, the millennial episode and the Brody Michael State of the World and then the states episode. So I think those are kind of the three real sweet spot periods.
Yeah.
But guns is really good. People have ever been interested about gun debates because we don't spend any time on current events. We just go right into it, talk about it for nearly an hour. It's just a really good episode. 27, what is an American? The immigration episode. Now that immigration's become more relevant than ever, have your ideals changed at all since then?
No.
28, abortion. This again. What do you think about this idea that this Gorsuch guy, Republicans are going to make an active push to re-ban abortion? That's going to be on their agenda. And you know Pence is going to promote it like hell.
Yeah, you know he will.
Pass a law where if you even said the word abortion, you go to jail.
If they had the opportunity, I don't see them getting on board and supporting it.
It's funny because the churches would love to have abortion illegal, but then they might lose a lot of their political muscle because a lot of the people really backing up churches is primarily for abortion. People have really given up on gay marriage and a lot of the other socially conservative things, but abortion's that one last big thing. If you did have an outright abortion ban and that was totally taken off the table, churches would be kind of like, oh, wait a minute. We may have to actually fight for some stuff. Jesus believed income inequality and saving the environment and become more liberal if they take away their one last big thing. That'll never happen. They'll go to something else probably. 29, are the outsiders really elites? This goes back to what we're saying about how Trump was able to paint himself as a scrappy underdog outsider who only had $2 billion to Hillary with this out of touch Marie Antoinette. This whole thing about elites and all this, it had nothing to do with class. It came down to experience. People just are really jealous of policy wonks and technocrats and people who really know what they're doing. Trump kind of presented them with this vision of jackpot America, a lottery America. He just seems like that dumbass who won the lottery, but of course he was born rich. Hillary, her success seemed like she had to struggle and work and work and work and work and become the best. You kind of feel isolated from that. It's like when you watch an Olympic gymnast and you think, I might never be Michael Phelps, but I might could be that million-dollar bowler. Michael Phelps, you're too old to really be that at a certain point, but you might could still be like sensational on the bowling circuit at 50. They Trump had that everyday American lottery winner bowling type, and Hillary seemed like she's been training for this since she was 12. You're 30 and you haven't done what you're going to do yet. You'll never do it.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people out of her success. 30, the literal title, but seriously, did Trump win? Terrifying episode in hindsight. 31, do people really care about Hillary's scandals? The passion of Hillary. Boy, do they ever care about them.
Yeah, they do.
32, are strict constitutionalists the American Taliban? Thought we would get a lot of pushback. I thought people would really get mad that we were saying that, but it turned out to be the opposite. People were enthusiastic about it. I think their strict constitutionalists are getting on people's nerves because it's all phony anyway. I mean, Ted Cruz, strict constitutionalist. Whatever Trump wants to do, all of the constitutional people, the Rand Pauls, the Paul Ryans, well, the Constitution says if they believe in it anyway, they're going to go along with it.
Yeah.
33, We Need to Talk About Islam. This one was kind of the most controversial.
Yeah,
people really didn't like it. Some people loved it, but it had a lot of views. People wouldn't always talk about it, but on iTunes, it was the most consistently high-ranking episode until they took it off.
Yeah.
It really inspires a lot of strong reactions for people. It feels like everybody's getting an opinion.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I think we did a pretty good job laying out Islam as a whole.
Yeah.
Pointing out some of the things that people don't really talk about.
Yeah. This is kind of my favorite episodes when we're talking about guns or Islam or something where
we
all
don't
you
talk
see
about
on television.
Trump.
But anytime we can avoid Trump, Democrats are already making that mistake where you get on Twitter, they literally spend 24 hours a day hating Trump's guts.
Yeah.
And during the Oscars, I posted something about how I was glad that The Jungle Book won Best Visual Effects. And somebody wrote in, be like, I'm just glad that they didn't use real animals. I can totally support. That made it political. And I'm like, no, you got to give it a rest sometimes. Some of the stuff we've done by the podcast, we can kind of go off and talk about Brad and Angelina for 5 fucking minutes. This is a small little break. It doesn't have to be, well, I just hope those children that they've got from Somalia and Angelina's house know about the human trafficking. You got to give it a rest sometimes. I liked the Islam episode because it takes something really complicated and really kind of nuanced. And you never see this on television. You never see somebody like, all right, let's just talk about it for an hour and just kind of get into the weeds and see what we say. It's like 30 seconds of Van Jones calling people an Islamophobe and then Newt Gingrich saying, you don't want to keep America safe. And that's the debate, you know, but they never get into the weeds of this stuff. It's a distinguishing episode. That's probably in my top 10. 34, Do We Need a Revolution in the Third Party Bid? Good episode. People still talking about Dem Exit, leaving the party. People talking about a third party right now. At least some of them have to be paid Republican plants.
Yeah.
But you're going to see Newt Gingrich, he'll kiss as a woman or something, and come in there like, we should start a third party. That would only benefit Republicans at this point. Right now, there's really two parties. 35, What Will Obama Do Out of Office and Predicting His Legacy? Boy, Obama looks better every day, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's like that supermarket wine that's going to sit on your shelf for 30 years, and then he'll age into a delicacy. Talk about before that Abraham Lincoln may not have been as good a president as people think. It's just that he was surrounded by such shitty presidents. You had Buchanan and Johnson and Ulysses S. Grant. Literally 4 of the worst 5 presidents of all time were either right before Lincoln or right after him.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's Obama's case where George W. Bush was right before him, Trump's after him? You can't help but look better being bookended by these two shitheads.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We still see people shitting on him, still.
Yeah.
I feel like Trump could come in there and take a shit on the Oval Office rug, and then somehow it'd be like, well, Obama shouldn't have picked such a crappy-looking rug. Why did he pick such an ugly rug? He picked a yellow pattern, and yellow has been proven to make animals shit on a rug. He's been proven in scientific study.
Well,
Trump apparently believes Obama's organizing the protest against him, and Obama's down in the Caribbean on a fucking sailboat, and liberals are the same way. I saw some liberal being like, Obama's working on a strategy for voter suppression. Obama's working on his third margarita right now. Like, what are you talking about, a strategy for voter suppression? Like, he's out. Like, when are you going to wake up? His presidency was 8 years. You had 8 years to say if he was a good one or a bad one, and so Republicans still talking about he's behind everything bad, and Democrats, he's going to come save us. That window's over, and you need to start evaluating his legacy rather than being like, oh, he's going to come in at the last minute and stage a coup on Trump, and your opinion of that is whether you're a liberal or a conservative, but that's a good thing.
Well, not only that, but Trump's out here saying, well, I inherited a mess. It was
But you ever just wish if there was a God, that would be a hell of a time to reveal himself. Like, that would be perfect timing if there ever was a God. If God just parted the clouds and was like, quit lying, asshole. Or like, what would you do if the voice of God came down and arrested him, like, just said, Trump, knock it off, quit it. You know?
Yeah.
As we've talked about before, Democrats, we are the janitors for the Republican Party.
Yeah.
You know, Reagan
and
George H.W. Bush make a huge mess. Bill Clinton cleans it up. George W. makes a huge mess. Obama cleans it up. I thought it was going to be Jeb Bush making a huge mess, and then Kamala Harris comes in there and cleans it up. But now it's Trump. He's going to make a huge mess. And in 2020 or 2024, whenever it is, we're going to have to come in and fix all this shit. That's what's so frustrating is that we keep having to spend so much of a Democratic presidency fixing this crap that they do.
Yeah.
You can't look back at the last 100 years, Nixon, Harding, Hoover, the Bushes, Trump, and then Democrats, LBJ, Obama, JFK, FDR, Bill Clinton. You can't look at that and say, gee, which one's been better at running the fucking country than, of course, Republicans? Well, Reagan, when he personally came down with the Ten Commandments, and I can see Reagan's commandments, thou shalt not increase government spending, thou shalt not raise taxes. If we had more episodes, I'd like to do one about Reagan and just how shitty he was.
Yeah.
It would kind of be about the gig economy and deregulation, the middle class shrinking. What would you want to do episodes about that we just didn't get to?
You know, I think it'd be evaluating Trump's cabinet picks.
Well, that is a perfect segue. Man, you set me up because you've heard that, like, they finish each other's sentences. We finish each other's grievances. Back to 36. In defense of teachers, the education episode, Betsy DeVos. I didn't know this. Her brother is Eric Prince, the CEO and founder of Blackwater. And her father-in-law, Richard DeVos, is the founder of Amway, the legendary pyramid scheme. Boy, people run in the family. It's pretty rare to find that much raw talent in one family. What if it shows that one of our cousins is Vladimir Putin?
Yeah. And
grandfather's Dracula. I was saying about Michigan being more Republican than people realize. She had a lot to do with that. Her husband was Republican candidate for governor against Jennifer Granholm. He was going to win. He was really close to winning until Bush was president at the time, and the Iraq War became more and more unpopular, and that sank his popularity just because he was a Republican. But he was going to win, and they were going to have a Republican even back at that time period. I mean, Michigan has been gradually creeping towards a red state for a very long time, and I think she had a lot to do with that because they spread a lot of religious propaganda and a lot of money, and they bought up the legislature. You're a teacher and a Christian, and when you see Betsy DeVos basically babbling about Jesus would want us to cut school funding. If we don't have 10 commandments in the classroom, Jesus wouldn't want this school to exist.
Yeah.
I mean, there must be a part of you. You wish you could be able to spin it.
No, I just wish she would come to my classroom one day. Just one day, come to my classroom. She would probably be praying, all right. She'd be praying that she could get out of there.
Yeah. In 36, definitely top five in the education episode.
Yeah.
Well, we do really well when we just take a single issue and work it backwards in front in the whole hour. But we look at college debt all the way down to getting into a private preschool and everything in between, inner city schools, charter schools, the whole range. And I specifically call out public administrators that are bleeding off all the cake, and politicians and parents, the three P's. And Betsy DeVos is a perfect combination of what I'm talking about. You have a public administrator who knows almost nothing about education, has no classroom experience, and the politician who knows on the solution, which is to basically get funds and give them to private schools.
Yeah.
Looking back at what I was saying about administrators and politicians, I couldn't have anticipated Trump picking a better candidate to make my case for me than this woman who knows nothing about schools, but she knows how to steal money from the budget, put it somewhere else. Doesn't seem to have any affinity for teachers or kids at all.
Yeah.
Trump's going to put Paul Ryan in charge of the Department of Empathy.
The woman made a joke about stopping free lunches for students.
Kids will go hungry in the classroom. And she's made several comments in support of how HBCUs were a perfect example of school voice. Got started specifically to keep black kids out of white schools. They specifically did not have a choice because they couldn't go to a white college. They had to go to an HBCUs. I feel like she could look back at the segregation schools. You had like a black school that was really just a barn kid shack. This proves the success of school choice. We should go back to that system. She's an idiot. I mean, when I see her being interviewed, she gets that stupid smile on her face. You could tell somebody like that has inherited wealth. And she is. Her father was a rich, successful businessman. Her brother, her father-in-law. I love how these people like that, who have inherited every fucking thing they've ever got, tell people hard work and choice and the government should be making these decisions. And they are so beneficial genetically. Do you think Betsy DeVos, her intelligence level, if she'd been born the daughter to like a single mom as a Kmart cashier, would we even fucking know her? Would we even know who this person is?
No.
Part of it is luck. But when you see somebody who was born into a good family, which is all luck, no, luck has nothing to do with it. It's all about hard work. In fact, the richer you are, the more you're born into a good family, the more you don't believe in luck, which is all luck. 37, are fossil fuels holding us back? The climate episode. I think this is the most exciting episode because we're looking at the future and how can climate crisis be done away with? And of course, it's not exciting anymore because that dumbass is in the White House and he's not going to do any of this stuff. We're putting forth a lot of great proposals. If people go back and listen to that, there's a lot of really great ideas in there. And it's just too bad that we're stuck with such a shithead that doesn't want to do any of it. But stuff about Israel have all this water filtration technology. People may have to come to them when we have a water drought, an electric car battery that can power itself through mechanical energy. I mean, there's a lot of great ideas in there. Sadly, that doesn't look like a priority for the Trump administration. I mean, he's talking about coal and oil, and we're basically going to a Mad Max economy where there's just roving gangs looking for oil tankers.
Yeah.
All these post-apocalyptic movies, none of that shit is relevant in a green economy. Whenever I see like all these people like, oh, we have to siphon off gas. Whenever you watch The Walking Dead or Mad Max, do you ever think like, gee, does a bicycle not exist? Like, whenever you're 38, how not to make it in the media episode. that's basically a one-man monologue where I lay out the fear and loathing of trying to make it in entertainment. And by the way, if anybody would like to sponsor this podcast or syndicate it, please get in touch with me and let me know. If you'd like to sponsor a stand-up show or fund one of my movies or something like that, I have a lot of scripts. Get in touch with me and let me know. I probably should have opened with this and not buried it in the back of the fucking podcast episode where like five people were here. Anyway, maybe this is why the episode's called How Not to Make It in the Media. We'll see. 39, are we poisoning ourselves, food, and other addictions? My 330 series is still going on. I think I've got like 8 episodes left. Probably wrap that up in April or May. You're not quite ready to say goodbye to both series yet. That's going to go on for about another month or two. So much more that can move between now and then. Fish for the podcast, I'll go on a starvation diet.
Yeah.
How do Democrats lose the Southern and Northern strategy? This is especially relevant because I think we hit on a lot of the problems the Democrats have been having. Rural areas, state parties. If Hillary had won, Democrats would have been like, oh, everything's fine. And they would have went right back to getting their clock cleaned at the state level. But we were talking about state level and state parties in episode 40.
Yeah.
And kind of the nutshell case of how do Democrats lose. They take a big issue to make it small. Republicans take a small issue, make it big. Republicans take the estate tax. States, almost nobody, but there'll be a mom, oh my God, my China collection may not go to my daughter because of the estate tax. And the Republicans found a way to make tax cuts for the rich a big issue. We won't make it about a tax cut for the rich. We'll make it about jobs. And this is going to create jobs. Everybody could have this fantasy job in their mind. Most people who already have a job, Republicans having this huge tax cut, giving that out to business. You've already got a job. Then what's the fantasy job you're going to get with the tax cut? Well, right now I'm a mailman, but if they get a tax cut, I might be a movie producer. What's the different job that you're going to get like post-tax cut? There's not one. Democrats do the opposite. They take a huge issue, climate crisis, and break it down into smaller pieces. Income inequality began as the biggest issue in the world, 99% versus one person. And somehow we broke it down into, well, you know, white people have had a better 8 years than black people. You take an issue like mass incarceration, say America's got the highest prison population in the world. What do we do about it? Everybody's on board. Everybody's like, okay, it's not good that 1% of America will wind up in jail. And then liberals said, well, actually, it disproportionately affects black people. Okay, already you went from 100% of America to 13%. Well, actually, it's black men, and then you go to 6%. Well, actually, it's young black men in urban areas that dress a certain way, look a certain way, don't have a college degree. I mean, you get progressively and progressively smaller instead of just opening it up with you're paying tax dollars to put people in jail. Do you think somebody who has a bag of marijuana should be in jail? Most people would say no to that. But when you begin dividing into Russian nesting dolls of smaller and smaller demographics, I hear me saying that, and I hear like somebody who, but it's true that more black men go to jail than white people, and that is true. I'm not saying that that's not true. That's definitely true, and it's definitely a racist system, as you pointed out in episode 7. But the problem is, when you put it that way, a white person that's older, they immediately say, oh, this doesn't affect me, and they turn out. People are selfish. We kind of have a tendency to go for issues that we feel like affect us personally. That's not just white people, that's everybody. When you start saying to a Trump voter in Iowa that, like, black men in Baltimore, they're getting locked up at a disproportionate rate, he's like, what's that got to do with me? But when you say 1% of the entire country is in jail, your tax dollars are going to keep them in jail, then I start thinking, oh, it's an economic burden versus, oh, a lot of black men are going to jail. Good, they won't be robbing my house. And that's how Republicans have been able to phrase it. They're in jail, they're not a threat to you anymore. Democrats have to phrase it as, too much of your tax dollars are going to keep people in jail. You're taking an entire generation out of schools, out of jobs. 41, what is corruption? Free Don Siegelman. Only positive development politically that's happened since we started the podcast is Siegelman's out on not really parole. He's under house arrest, but at least he's not in jail anymore. This episode is incredibly relevant. What is corruption? And what I was saying about corruption is typically what gets investigated and what does not get investigated. The post-Michael Flynn Russia world has shown that that's incredibly true.
Yeah, definitely.
The investigation or lack of investigation applies the most to Trump's cabinet. Tomorrow, Rex Tillerson, he's going to be like, here, take my sports car to like the ambassador of Cuba. Hey, Rex, you can't do that. Ah, come on. It's not a big deal. 42, are our elections a big business? Yes. 43, the gender episode. Again, we're pointing out a lot of angry young men feel like there's not a place in society for them. That's what's fueling a lot of the violence, literal physical violence, and then the violence of just supporting somebody like Trump. They feel locked out of the economy. You kind of have to have a young son to see the difference. Like, I'm 73 years old, and sometimes we'll go to his preschool, and the girls are over there making the most extraordinary things, science projects and model rockets, and then the boys are over there hitting each other with sticks. Well, what did they say? They're like, oh, he mostly played with cars, but you got to see what he made. It's like a model solar system. The expectations for young men feel so beneath the basement.
Yeah.
And literally, out of nowhere, you'll just be watching a kid's show, and there'll be something like, young women can do anything. They're really good at math and science. And then the boys, like, their skills are playing video games. People say male entitlement. I understand that because I'm older. But when you're 3 years old, you're not aware that boys have advantages.
Yeah.
Kids show up being like, girls are really good at math. Girls are really good at science. And they don't say that about boys. There's never been a time we've watched something where it's like, and boys are great at science. If you said something like that, there'd be a protest. They'd be like, what are you trying to say? Girls not good at math?
Yeah.
So you have to understand that boys don't hear a lot of these messages. The thinking is, though, well, it's implied. It's implied that boys can do anything and they're good at this and they don't need to be told this. But when they're three, they don't know that. They might watch it and be like, oh, this girl's a genius at math. And they might be like, oh, what are boys good at? Hitting each other with sticks. Girls are in there like, oh, we're training to be the future generation of America. You go to a law school, women outnumber men by a huge margin in law school, medical school, all these advanced degrees. We're really transitioning into an economy that is better for women. Men are kind of like, well, what am I going to do? What's my job prospects going to be? I saw some old interview with Trump where they're asking him about his first marriage, and he was like, if I come home and my wife hadn't made dinner, I hit the roof. Trump's a fucking sexist pig. People being like, why were you so bullish on Hillary? I guess I didn't think that women could look at it. They're like, here's the first female president versus Trump's the most openly sexist candidate I've ever seen for president. I mean, I haven't seen anybody this bad.
Yeah, I agree.
We were banking on the fact that a majority of women would vote for Hillary. And who would have thought to not bank on that? 44, why are we Democrats? Great episode. Why they represent us, why we support them, why more people should support them. Makes a really good case for the Democratic Party. 45, what the fuck happened? This is the post-election episode. This is the longest one. This one's almost an hour and a half long. It's a good episode, but it's so emotional. I mean, if I could have sat there on the podcast and fucked Trump 90 times back to back, and probably would have done that. But we still break down the different types of Trump supporters and how did this guy get authoritarian voters and anti-establishment voters? Like, how was he able to thread that needle and get these different guys? 46, are millennials different? I love this episode because I think it kind of shows how social media has warped our thinking, and 30 years of Reaganomics has had us so programmed to want to be rich. We were so busy thinking about becoming rich, we never looked at it that we're actually becoming poor because of social media and the way that it's framed that millennials are spoiled and we have all this shit and reality shows. We don't actually really ever push back that baby boomers have more stuff than we do. And they had more when they were our age, too. Millennials were the first generation in American history to have less money than their parents, but we don't ever push back when baby boomers said that we're spoiled, because when you look at social media, we look spoiled as fuck. Like, it looks like we're ridiculous when you look at the media and social media reality shows. I mean, a lot of millennials are still living at home. You'll see millennials be like, how come I can't get a date? Well, I don't know. Maybe because you still live at home. And like, you went from dinner and a movie to be like, oh, we'll come to my mom's house and watch Netflix on the couch. It's like a Netflix account that five people are sharing. And I hope you bring your own food because I don't have any. Crimp in your lifestyle, so to speak. Did you like that episode, the millennial one?
I did, yeah.
Speaking about your kids at school, the future brats of America, that's my big fear. I don't want to become Adam Carolla. I don't want to become 50 years old. Ah, these goddamn Generation Z, I hope we're not 70 years old in the nursing home being like, oh, have you seen Generation AA? What a bunch of pieces of shit.
I will say they make me say that a couple of times a day.
47, Brody and Michael Save the World. Great episode. A lot of great ideas. A more hopeful episode. They're trying to solve a lot of things. Pretty open about the fact I think racism can be fixed by interracial relationships. Not just the way to fix it, I think it's the only way to fix it. As long as there's two sides of something, you're never going to have true unity of anything. You start having people feel connected into the fate of interracial relationships. Okay, if I'm white and I'm married to a blonde woman and I have black kids or whatever, and I hear people say, we need more diversity, we need like a more diverse workforce, we need affirmative action in schools. As I said, people are selfish, and they'll short-circuit that into, ooh, if they give that to a different kid, then my kids don't get that, or my wife doesn't get that. But when my wife is Nigerian, as I said many times, kind of noticed that we're going into these workforces and there's like one or two black employees, and that's it. It's a lot more difficult to get hired. When my son's applying to preschools, it's a very, very, very diverse school. And it's like half white and half Korean and one black kid. And they don't want to let us in. We would interview at schools. They would be like, oh, we have an African studies program. This is for a fucking preschool, by the way. But they'd be like, we have an African studies program. And I'd have the kids up there singing like songs in Swahili. And it'd be blonde kids. My wife can't get out of certain places. My son can't get into certain schools. You start absorbing that. Probably the only reason that I give a shit about some of the stuff I've been complaining about in the media is just because I'm an actor. And I'm trying to get somewhere. So when they say we need more and more and more diverse voices, that isn't really a big deal in it, but I think I may perceive that as a threat solely because I'm trying to do what they're trying to do. So right there, I'm already seeing your selfishness, your bias can't come out of that way. In other areas and aspects in corporate America, I'm like, yeah, they need to be way, way, way more diverse because they're not diverse. My wife can't get hired in preschools and private schools. They need to be way more diverse. My son can't get in. It's already made me more aware and more open than I would have been otherwise. 48, is America still great? What do you think, Michael? Is America still great?
Canada's looking greater and greater.
It's funny because in 47, Brody Michael said the world, I literally proposed that Canada and America merge. I think it should be the United States and North America, and we should just let them come in as 10 states. And I'm pretty sure most of America, because Trump's got a 37% approval rating, I'm pretty sure they would be glad to have Justin Trudeau as president.
Yeah.
I know you're a Shark Tank fan. Did you see where Kevin O'Leary is going to run for prime minister of Canada? You see that story?
Yeah, I did.
That's all we need. We got England doing Brexit. We got Trump in America. All we need is that asshole in Canada. Okay, civilization, as we know it, is over. The Western world can go ahead and say RIP 2020. I thought, yeah, you're going to go from Obama to Trump and Justin Trudeau to Kevin O'Leary. What are we doing? You're more religious than I am, but if it was Kevin O'Leary, Canada, Trump, America, would you kind of start to question God a little bit? Would you be like, I don't know? You know, it would shake you a little bit.
The saving grace in 2024. America's got Kanye and Canada's got Bieber.
Obama, Trump, Kanye. And then, like, Trudeau, O'Leary, Bieber. If you saw that, would that not be the perfect example of idiocracy? Okay, we're going to replace a cool, smart, intelligent man with a huge flaming asshole. And then we're going to replace that asshole with some punk kid who might have mental problems.
Like, even North Korea would be like, do we really want to waste our first and only nuclear bomb on them? Like,
North Korea would be like, we got to get some better enemies. You see Kanye come strolling up into the United Nations wearing a fur coat, have fucking gold chains, you know, he's like, nobody can top my swag. And then you see, like, the president of France, be like, boy, they'll just let anybody in here, won't they? It's funny because whenever we criticize Republicans, why are you such Trump bootlickers? Why don't you stand up to him? People say, well, you wouldn't do it if he were a Democrat. You have to think, what's the Democratic equivalent of Trump? And I've already heard what you're saying, Kanye is going to run in 2020. And I'm like, okay, that's the equivalent. If Democrats had nominated Kanye West, I'd be like, sure, we'll take John Kasich. I'd go out and canvass for John Kennedy.
Yeah.
I might canvass for Ben Carson at that point.
Sleep with the president, so what's it matter?
I believe in interracial relationships. Like, I believe in them totally. I think black men, white women couples, they get so much shit. People don't understand, like, how hated they are. The number one movie in America, that Get Out, was basically an advertisement. Hey, black men, don't date white women. You had all these black women be like, it's a great movie. I love it. It is really terrible how much they're hated and despised. But the Kardashians, I feel like they're single-handedly trying to ruin interracial couples' reputations. Well, you're so Mr. Interracial. Is there anybody you're not glad to interracial? You don't know how glad I am that Ben Carson and Omarosa are not in an interracial relationship. Omarosa doesn't date white guys, and Ben Carson doesn't date white women. The only two exceptions in America where I'm glad that they're not with anybody. I'm really glad Trump's not married to a black woman. That would single-handedly ruin our reputation. What Democrat do you think would be like the Trump equivalent? Like, when they say, well, you wouldn't support Kanye or you wouldn't support Anthony Weiner.
I would support Weiner.
You would support him?
Yeah, I would.
Say that if John McCain's like, I rest my case. He should say that.
No, I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I wish I would get back with you the next episode, but...
You know what's going to happen tonight? If I'm on a Trump sleep schedule, I don't fucking sleep. As you well know, I won't be going to bed at 4 or 5 in the morning. I'll be laying down. I'll be like, wait a minute, I forgot that Putin joke I was going to say. Like, I know something will hit me, a ton of goddamn bricks, and I'll be like, oh, why didn't I bring that up? And it'll be the last episode. Like, I know that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
If you have any jokes that you've had written down and you've been like, I can't get a word in edgewise because of this lockdown, now is a great time.
Speechless.
You take my breath away.
And I can't deliver.
Episode 49, Mission Unaccomplished, 50 State Tour of America and Rebuilding Democratic Party. As I said, the true climax. Thought that one was going to be really long because when we recorded it, it was over 3 hours. I kept you shanghaied. People going to be like, why doesn't Michael talk as much as he does? I'm like, because I kidnapped him. You don't understand that we recorded this in my basement. He's tied up out there and he's talking much. I'm hitting 49. I cut that from like 3 hours down to less than an hour and a half. And it's actually shorter than 45. So 45, just this inarticulate ramble. I'm like, fucking Trump, that guy fucking sucks. And then 49. Is a literal 50-state tour of America and first 20 minutes rebuilding the entire Democratic Party top-to-bottom overhaul and 50-state tour. Maybe we're not Anna Faris, but we all are on the podcast game, I think.
I think so, too.
Couldn't find that anywhere else. In terms of the 12 steps of the Democratic Party, we just elected Tom Perez. Are we back on the right track? I don't think we can take back the Senate in 2018. 23 Democrats up for re-election. All of them have to hold their seats, and there's only 9 Republicans to flip 3 of them. Is there even a shot at the House of Representatives?
I don't think so. Democrats are looking at 2020. If anything, I see Republicans picking up some congressional seats in 2018. Just the numbers are against the Democrats.
It sucks. If there's any silver lining, it's that typically the opposition party picks up seats. Bill Clinton came into the White House with the Democratic Congress, and then 2 years later, they flipped to a Republican Congress. And Bush came in with the Republican Congress in 2006. They flipped to a Democratic Congress.
Yeah.
Obama obviously lost Congress in his first 2 years. And Trump is more unpopular than any of these people. Might get even worse. With Trump, you're threading the needle. You want him to stay this unpopular, but then you don't want him to, because if he's in single digits, that means we've declared war with China. If he's in single digits, it means that there's nothing left in America but like cockroaches and people with bunkers. Actually, if it's people with bunkers, he'll be at 100% because there'll be all these paranoid weirdo bunkers. They're like, Trump's doing a great job. You know, like nobody else is dead. Like all people in cities are wiped out. There's nobody but like, I told you it was a coming. The reckoning. I voted for Trump because it's a reckoning. You hope that he doesn't just completely destroy things. If he got to 20% or less than that, it probably means we're at a really unpopular war. The economy's tanked. It's terrible. But you don't want things to really get enough that his popularity improves, because then that does hurt Democrats. The only real hope is that we might pick up some governor's seats. And at least if you can start begin defining him on the statewide level. 49, we give a lot of examples of how certain states Democrats can take back. But in terms of the congressional seats, the only good news with him being president is in 2020, if he's that unpopular and we get him out of there and then we get a Democratic House of Representatives, they can do what Republicans did and draw up the congressional lines, and then we can control it for a decade. Not total gerrymandering like what they did. The last several congressional elections, they actually only get about 48% of the vote. So Democrats get more votes than the House of Representatives, but they control the seats.
Right.
And that's just pure gerrymandering. Democrats won't have to do that. If they just take it back to how it was and they just make it fair and get rid of the gerrymandering, then when they get 52 to 53% of the vote, as they have been doing, you'll just see them getting a majority of the seats, and it'll just go back to how it should have always been before they redistricted the shit out of it in 2010.
Exactly.
It's been an amazing run of episodes. Have you had fun?
It's been the worst time of my life.
What if you just said, help me? You're in your bunker shooting out a flare throughout the window, and I'm like, we got it. And
this has been really fun. I remember you calling me, pitching the idea, and I was like, well, I don't know how it's going to work, but let's give it a shot. It has been fun.
I have to call you because that gay communist Muslim meeting in the middle of downtown Birmingham at the time.
I thought we were keeping it a secret.
There'll be some guy I knew it. I knew those guys. Have Trump snap his fingers like, get them. They have ice kicks in the door. And all I can ask is that when we get put in Guantanamo Bay, if you don't go to Gitmo and I go to Guantanamo Bay, I hope we can at least, or I can get low playing checkers with cockroaches or something. Like I have the ones that are slightly brownish. I hope people listen have had a good time. It kind of has to be a little bit fun because it's a free podcast. And there's not a lot else that you can do for fun anymore. Cable is expensive. I used to love going to the movies all the time, but now movies are like $15 a ticket in Los Angeles. So you can be like, well, I can put a second mortgage on my house trying to go to the movies. When you go to the movies, they get this assigned seating bullshit, the reserve seating. I hate it. You pick a seat. At first, they give you the monitor. It's like a game of fucking Battleship. I'm going to take P5 down to eight purple or something, and then you get in the theater. I saw John Wick 2 recently, and the girl who sat beside me stunk of cigarette smoke. Visibly.
Yeah.
A picture looking over there and it's like stink lines coming off of her or something, but you don't know if somebody's going to stink. Sometimes it's like, oh, let's go get 5 kids and sit in front of Brody at the R-rated movie. Your seat just hits your ankle, the itchy, you can have headphones, and you get to inside the theater and it's like you got to do a Sudoku puzzle in the fucking theater, like L5. No, this is D5 going down. I'm freaking out like, no, I think you're in PL. No, PL is this one. And you get them to move over and then you get your seat. They can have bedbugs, and so you're starting to think, well, maybe a new Melissa McCarthy movie just as good at home. So then you sit at home and you say, well, I want to go out and I want to do something. So then you go to like SeaWorld. Liberals are like, SeaWorld, did you know that you're worse than Hitler for going there?
Yeah.
I mean, that's okay. I'll go to the zoo. I don't like the zoo either. Now the circus is closing. Part of the boat is closing. Trump has already put people out of a job. They're like, oh, we're just going to go take a residence at the White House. That's all that they need. And then a baseball game, because the Dodgers game's pretty cheap. The Rams tickets were pretty expensive. I love how baseball, you go there, 90% of people watching the game don't give a shit at all. The girl shows up just long enough to take a selfie with the stadium in the background and then leaves. They show up like an hour into the fucking game, take the selfie and leave like 30 minutes after that. Baseball fans are really interesting because they're so hardcore. I'm not talking about like your Dodgers fans, which are Mexicans that have never actually been to a Dodgers game. They'll be like, yeah, Dodgers, you ever been to a game? No, you're hardcore baseball fans. They're writing down the numbers. They've made a way to make sporting events so much fun. They're like doing an algebra test, adding up the RBI, the stats. Some little kid comes up and, excuse me, Mr. just get so angry, like having a good time around them because you're kind of angry about the numbers. And so then you think, well, I'll go to a football game. Bad idea, because then it's just like an angry mob. Yeah. A baseball fan is like a guy who's about to go shoot up a post office. A football fan, fat, loud, half their face is blue, half their face is red. There's always something kind of homoerotic about football fans, too. It's like four of us will go there. We'll take off our shirts. We'll spell out the team's name. Here, let me paint the R on your chest. Just picture like them sitting at home watching the game and being like, yeah, this game's awesome. You know what would be even better? If we blew each other right now. Wait, what? Not confused by this right now. There's not a lot of ways that you can really have fun anymore. So maybe I get in my car and I become an Uber driver and I'll drive around like economy country for me, and I feel like they're squeezing people. But if there's any way that we've helped people with economics, it's the fact that we've produced a free podcast for 50 episodes.
Yeah.
If you haven't paid to listen to this, and we give people a lot of advice and ideas free, I hope they learned a lot. First, what's next for you and I? What's next for us as people?
We will always be together.
I figure you'll commit suicide. I mean, that's the only honorable thing to do. Now that the podcast is out, I can't do it. I'm a family man. I have kids. So you have to do it. Commit the honorable samurai suicide after they've fought a big battle or something. They have to go out.
So, fall on.
I don't know. In Japanese culture, from samurai to kamikaze pilot, suicide was such a big deal, and now there's not enough of them to do that anymore. Like, oh, wait, we're all dead. And it's not about them 46. Their birth rates are incredibly low. Any predictions on the country, future trends, and technology, politics? I mean, where is it all going? Where is it all headed? Where are we going?
Seriously, no lying aside, with Trump as president, I have no idea. I mean, he could be on the brink of some type of huge medical or scientific breakthrough, and he's going to cut funding for it so we can build more tanks.
See, a scientist sitting in the lab, and he's like, I just created these new nanobots, and the nanobots are so artificially intelligent, they're going to figure out a way that we can terraform Mars. We can terraform other planets so that humanity can spread out and we can kind of not be so overpopulated and confided. And by the way, they're so intelligent that they can clean our rivers, our streams. They can basically reverse climate crisis. All I need is $1 million grant. If you get that grant, then who's going to buy weapons to stop the Russians in 1987? What the fuck does he want these weapons for? He obviously is not fighting Russia. When he talks about that military increase, you know he means like physical weapons and not cybersecurity.
Yeah.
He's not talking about like hiring a new generation of engineers to re-strengthen our cybersecurity, which is exactly what we have to do, is rebuild our mainframes, rebuild our infrastructure, stop all this hacking of everything. In Trump's mind, Russian hacking is not as big a threat as leaks from the media. Not that China and Russia and Iran and all these countries are inside our power mainframes. They're inside our networks. Russia right now, as we record this podcast before we post it, they're probably listening to this phone call. Completely inaccurate, Brody. Completely inaccurate.
Yeah.
Listening to this phone call that we're doing, they're everywhere. But is it anything about cybersecurity? No, it's to build a huge fucking tank to fight nobody. ISIS, you guys stay in the same place for half a day while we get these tanks in here, and then they go scatter out into the mountains. Like, a tank is too slow for the type of fighting that we're engaged in right now. It's not the same wars that we had 50 years ago, and we're still building weapons to fight enemies that no longer exist, while the only enemy that does exist, Russia, is Trump. No page of those opinion polls, you're doing a great job. When Obama was president, it was exciting to think about the future. Now liberals are thinking about the past. Oh, man. When Obama was, I like what you said about there could be a new life-saving technology. I'm not afraid of artificial intelligence. A lot of people are really afraid of artificial intelligence. They think the robots are going to rise up. I don't know why they're so afraid of robots. I mean, you get Paul Ryan and Mike Pence. How much worse could it be? Mike Pence is the Terminator. Paul Ryan is a soulless robot. Like, what would really make people saying artificial intelligence would be so far ahead of us that they would view us as a thing to exterminate? We are dramatically more intelligent than mosquitoes and rats.
Yeah.
all these animals that are completely annoying. We got to save whales. We got to save bees. I don't hear anybody but we got to save the rats. Now, that's really important to Mother Nature, that rats, there's a little thing. Like, we have the power right now to probably eradicate rats, useless species that does nothing but scare the hell out of everybody and go around and spread diseases, and we haven't done it. Nobody's even really saying that we should do it. Artificial intelligence, if they look at us the way we look at insects, we have exterminated insects. We kill them if they get in our house, if they get in our way, but by and large, most people don't go out of their way to be cruel to animals. Most people.
Yeah.
Evolution. We basically were descended from monkeys. Artificial intelligence will be descended from us. In this case, we'll be the monkeys. We programmed it and we'll pick up some of our habits the same way monkeys are not genocidal monsters going around murdering. Animals are inherently good. They eat for food. Other than that, they don't necessarily go out of their way to be cruel towards each other. Right now, human beings, we're halfway between animals and robots. We're half animal, half robot. And that's basically what a human being is. You'll have somebody come in and be like, oh, this is great. I'm going to program this new app. And then you go outside, you get a parking ticket. Motherfucker, I'm going to burn the place down. And that's a total animal response, conflicting with your robot response. But in general, people say, well, you're more evolved and you're more sympathetic than an animal is. Like, we're not just out there hunting things on the savannah, most of us. So we've shed a lot of that DNA from the animals.
Unless you're a Trump son.
Trump, that's his problem. Too much orangutan blood. Bill Maher was that all along. What if Trump really was just a giant orangutan? Like, can you believe these idiots? I think I'm a human being. And he's out there. Like, he throws his poop, the State of the Union address. They go, he's rebuking political correctness by throwing that poop. It's an allegory for the times we live in. His fans really believe he's a genius. And then, of course, people that are not his fans know he's an idiot. I mean, Trump is really like an Andy Warhol performance piece brought to life. But I think if we're halfway between animals and robots, that may operate with less of our flaws. I think if you had true artificial intelligence, it might be the only thing big enough to save some of the planet at this point or terraform another one. More hopeful of technology like that. My only problem is we're not doing that.
Yeah.
The generation of engineers and great minds and scientists used to get government grants to come up with the next best thing. The government and internet gave birth to this generation of geniuses that we now have living on. The smartest people on the planet today are the smartest people who've ever lived. And that's because of the internet, a government program. So when the Trumps of the world and the Betsy DeVoses of the world and the Mike Pences of the world and the Paul Ryans of the world, that government is useless and it serves no function. These are things we're fighting for because we're fighting for the next generation of geniuses. But the problem I have with tech people today is they're less focused on, like, okay, how do we create the next nanotechnology? How do we get nanobots inside a human body to fight cancer cells? Used to think that way. Now they thank God. I can create this app called Nipple Alert, and women send in their nipple pics, and they get to match a nipple with this pic, and if somebody can find Melania's nipple, then they get a special prize. They've gone from thinking the way that people used to think as geniuses to basically somewhere between a marketer / pornographer, and that's where we're at right now with our tech people. Did we really need Uber? No. Taxi cab drivers existed. Airbnb, hotels existed. Yes, they fill a niche, and yes, they do that. But if the scientific breakthroughs are coming towards just getting rid of jobs that already exist, replacing it, rather than let's create an entirely new category. Let's create nanobots that repair people's organs. I can't believe people still die from organ failure. To me, that's outrageous that we can clone any organ we want to. Stem cell research is that people still die from organ failure. This is crazy. Yeah. We should be living in the future that we deserve. Michael, if you had kidney disease, you came up to me and you're like, hey, can I borrow a kidney? I'd be like, well, you know what we should do? We should use stem cell research to clone you a kidney. We have the technology now to 3D print organs. And the fact that we can do all these things and we're not doing it. Yes, I just hope that somehow, some way, we figure out a way to get people like Trump out of government and we start reinvesting in. Trump's vision of the future is coal and oil. He's talking about, like, butter churn America or something. I mean, he's talking about an America that hasn't existed for a long time. I just want to get back to that idea of we can have the tech and green economy of our dreams, but not the tech economy that says, hey, be a walking billboard for this company. Now you can do things like social media. Oh, look at this Pepsi I'm drinking. Let me take a picture of this. I'll get 2 cents for every click that I get on. Now we've become walking billboards and advertisements and whores and marketers, and that's all because of consumer technology apps. I just want to get back to the big ideas. I want to get back to what if America and Canada became the same country? What if we merged? What if we had nanobots that were able to repair organs? What if we had other kind of technology that was able to terraform planets? What if we were able to do big, huge things again? And I wish we would embrace that spirit again.
Same here.
And make America great again in that way.
Absolutely.
We're
going to
steal the meaning of that, and then Trump will sue us for copyright infringement.
We'll bring it on.
Michael, any closing thoughts?
It's been fun.
Thanks for listening. Maybe we can do follow-up in the future.
2020 will be ripe for one.
Exactly.
And assuming the internet still exists between now and then. We'll have episode 51 for the midterms, and then halfway during the episode, they'll shut down the internet. And where can people find you, people that like the podcast, that want to keep in touch, and follow you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on all social media.
Oh, here's the biggest tree. What's your name? I don't think we ever addressed that.
No, I don't think we did. They're all linked on my blog, blueinalabama.com.
Okay, blueinalabama.com. You got Twitter and Facebook on there?
Twitter and Facebook, yeah.
There you go. Highly recommended reading. You can find me at alabamaliberal.com. 330 series will be wrapped up, and there'll be something else. Like, I'm Brody Fletcher. He's Michael Burnick. I'm Brody Fletcher. I may start something else. There could be writing. If I can't get a book deal or something, you might be able to buy a book directly from my website or from a personal website. So this podcast stands. It set me on fire with new ideas of things to do. I'm looking forward to a new future. Michael, say goodbye to our fans.
So long, my loyal patrons.
For the last time, thanks for listening, everybody.